Chapter 35. A bright sun shone on the morning of the moratorium. Ron took it as a sign that the day was going to go well. At 9 a.m., he, the cartoonist, and Loreen made a clandestine drop of 500 commuter issues at three local high schools. Everything went without a hitch. They simply walked in when they heard a change of class bell, left the materials in scattered piles around the hallways. They'd quickly tell anybody in the vicinity who looked cool to be sure that the word got around. They encountered several semi-startled teachers, one of whom Ron presented with a personal copy of the paper, just visiting, thrown back over his shoulder. Walking quickly, he made his way back out the door, feeling like a commando. The moratorium program was in full swing when they got back to the college. Film clips by Vietnam vets against the war were shown nonstop in the gym, followed by 20-minute question-and-answer periods each hour. The social science teachers had come through in spades, providing a series of lectures that traced our history of involvement in Southeast Asia and projecting into a future implication for global politics. A guerrilla theater project was slated for the auditorium at noon, and the vets who still supported the war put on a program of opposing viewpoints in one of the larger classrooms. The college was filled with strange milling bodies. The snack bar and cafeteria ran out of food by noon and had to close. They reopened after some hasty and gleeful shopping. The administrator took the occasion to set up a table outside the admissions office, stacked with applications and booklets. Ron traveled from seminar to seminar with a notebook in which he made very few entries. It seemed that he was always too busy to write anything down. He spent the day traveling alone and avoiding the commuter room so that he wouldn't come into contact with Julian's wrapping ceremony. In his rush to get the last issue out, he'd neglected to assign any of the staff to cover any of the events. When the thought occurred to him, he dismissed the notion by thinking there was nothing he could do about it now. When he finally decided that it was safe to go to the newspaper room, he found it empty and untouched. He told himself that it was evidence that Julian was full of shit. The day had been successful. As far as Ron could figure, most of the faculty had canceled classes and were taking part in seminars that seemed to be happening everywhere, or attending the ones at which their colleagues were speaking. Ron had even seen real newspaper people there. Rebecca came into the commuter room, and Ron felt uncomfortable about her being there. It didn't seem like she belonged. She looked down into a group of pamphlets that were spread out in front of him, looked up again when she was standing next to him. "Are you very busy?" "Not anymore," he said. "Do you want to get some coffee?" "I can't. I've got to go. I just wanted to stop by and say hello." Ron glanced down at the group of things he'd been pretending to read and decided that he did not want to read them. "Did you go to any of the seminars?" "I went to see both groups of veterans," she said. Ron thought, "That's all?" It sounded like she hadn't taken full advantage of things. "What did you go to see?" Ron disliked the way she phrased the question. She made it sound like rides at a carnival. "I don't remember everything. It seems like I was all over." "I know. Joan said she saw you." "Who's Joan?" "One of my friends." "I don't know her." "She knows you. How?" "A lot of people know you, Ron." He wanted to tell her how much he hated the idea that one of her friends had seen him and reported back to her. "Was I doing anything special when she saw me?" "She didn't say that you were." Rebecca began curling her hair around her fingers. "Why? What were you doing today?" she said teasingly. "What?" He escalated his voice so that his annoyance was unmistakable. "I've got to go now, Ron," she said. She left the room and he began pacing. He lit a cigarette and headed to get some coffee. There were still plenty of people around, but for the most part, things were over. Loreen called to him from one of the snack bar tables. She was sitting with a guy that he didn't know. When he arrived at the table, the guy stood up and said that maybe he should talk to her some other time. Loreen dismissed him and turned her attention to Ron. "So," she said, "how are you doing?" "Good. Do you think any of those high school kids came?" "Sure," said Loreen. "A chance to get out of school with what they considered to be a good cause? They came." She sounded like she was talking about a successful sale. Ron didn't think she was that pretty, and he wasn't even sure that he wanted to fuck her. But she was smart. "Are you doing anything on Saturday afternoon?" "I don't think so." She looked at him sharply and wasn't smiling. "Did you know that the Jefferson Airplane was giving a free concert in Central Park?" "I'd heard something about it. Do you want to go?" "Sure," she said. She gathered her hair at one side of her face. He smiled, his acceptance smile at her. She returned a quick grin that only drew her mouth into a more momentary line, but the line never curved into the U of a smile. It just disappeared. He gathered that she'd tried to smile. "I'll need to know where you live." She drew a map on a napkin and explained how to get to her house. Ron didn't pay much attention because directions never made any sense to him when people said them. He would just look at the map later and figure things out. With that out of the way, they talked about which people they both knew at the college. He noticed that her eyes lit up and she was able to muster a smirk when he told her that Chris was one of his friends. "He just tries to be everybody's friend, doesn't he?" she said, teasing. "I guess so," said Ron, feeling relegated. "I guess you also know Julian. He introduced me to almost everybody I've met here." "He's going to love to hear that you're going out with me," said Ron. "Why?" she said. "There's nothing wrong with you." Ron smiled, but she wasn't looking. Ron could have sworn she'd seen the smile coming and deliberately turned away. They both looked up when Chris trumpeted his "all right" and sat down with a can of soda. He was bobbing his head emphatically. He lit a cigarette and began tapping his toe. "Why are you always so antsy?" said Loreen, laughing for what Ron thought was the first time in her life. It was a stuttering laugh that resembled someone pronouncing the word "oh" and getting stuck in the middle of it. Ron and Chris watched her laugh for a few seconds. "I don't know," said Chris, looking at the way his foot was tapping without a rhythm. "Have you seen Julian? He was supposed to meet me here, but there's no sight of him." "Oh, yeah," said Chris, snapping his finger and sitting up straighter. "He called me upstairs before and said that if I saw you, I should tell you to give him a call at home." Chris was surprised that he'd even seen her, and even more surprised that he'd remembered to deliver the message. "Is there something the matter with him?" "I think he's crashing again." "Well, I'd better call him." Ron watched her ass as she walked away. It was nothing either. "Do you know her good?" he said to Chris. "She's a friend of Julian's. I'm taking her out on Saturday." "Well, all right." Chris snapped his fingers again. "What do we do now?" "I'm too tired to do anything else today. Do you want to get stoned?" "Always." Ron followed Chris back to his house, saying that he would leave for home from there. Chris had a joint rolled, and they smoked it as he rolled another, which he lit immediately. "This is pretty good pot," said Ron. "Actually, it had the taste of low-grade Jamaican, but he was getting pretty high. It's not the same stuff we smoked the other day, is it?" Chris shook his head sadly. "That's all gone." "That's the way it always is. You start getting used to something good, and then it isn't there anymore." "The good pot will start coming in soon," said Chris. "What do you mean?" Ron knew about summer droughts, and he never made a connection between time of year and quality. "The crops will start coming in. They've been harvesting for a little while already. You can tell by the number of seeds and the amount of resin whether or not they were mature when they were cut. The stuff we've been getting has very little seed in it. Chris picked up his guitar and was strumming it as he talked. I guess I really don't know anything about it, said Ron. Do you know any Dylan songs? A couple, Chris broke into a series of chords that were nothing to brag about. It ain't me, babe. Give it a try, said Ron. He watched the way Chris' hand moved and the guitar neck with admiration. It was a Fender Stratocaster, but Ron didn't know it. Chris stopped playing and plugged the guitar into an amplifier. Did you take lessons, said Ron? 2 years. Why did you stop? Watch. He played a scale. Then he played another. And another. After 2 years, this is what I was still doing. He began to sing. Go away from my window. He shook his head. What comes next? Leave at your own chosen speed. Leave. He stopped again. The chord hadn't sounded right. He tried again. Yeah, that's it. Leave at your own chosen speed. He couldn't remember anything past the first verse, but he played it 3 times, and Ron was satisfied. Did you ever play, said Chris? Ron thought about Stanky Del Vallo. The guy was a midget. Ron had gone to his music shop to learn how to play the piano. He loved it and practiced whenever he could, but the problem was that nobody there owned a piano. He rented time at the back of one of Stanky's shops, but it got too expensive, and they never heard him play anything that resembled anything. They thought he probably wasn't any good. At one point, Ron tried drawing a keyboard on toilet paper. It took him over an hour, and then it ripped immediately. The solution was simple. They got him an accordion. He told Marjorie and Stanky that he liked it a lot. The truth was that he hated it more than anything else he'd ever seen in his life. It wheezed and reminded him of being sick. He found excuses to drop it and knock it over, but the thing was as durable as steel. Then he would just not practice anymore. He would tell them he wanted to play the saxophone. The doctor said that because of his asthma, it was out of the question. So they gave him a cornet. He felt like he was in the army and practiced by waking them up with it. He tried the trombone briefly, but bent the slide during a tantrum in the second week of practice. No, he said, I don't play anything, but I love music. Ron listened as he played soft blue riffs. You need calluses for the guitar, don't you? It was the one thing he knew about playing the instrument. Yeah, but they don't hurt. The question is, how do they feel on tits, said Ron, with mock seriousness. I never had any complaints, said Chris. Ah, but what about compliments? Chris broke into an instrumental version of As Tears Go By, and Ron said, how far can I go with the newspaper before I get into real trouble? What kind of trouble? I don't know. Then don't worry about it. Yeah, fuck them if they can't take a joke, right? Within reason, Chris played as they talked for a long time. Finally said, what are you going to do now? Head on home, I guess. Do you want to stay for dinner? I don't think so. I got to do some reading for class tomorrow. Are you going out with Rachel tomorrow? Asked Chris. Maybe. I think I might take Patty out. The girl from the meeting? She's friends with Rebecca. Do you want to do something together? That might be okay. Where does she think you're taking her? I haven't asked her yet. Patty was not the type of girl he would have pictured Chris with. Ron figured he had his pick of anybody he wanted. And Patty had stiffened every time Bobby had said anything off color. She looked okay, but she wasn't spectacular, and there was surely no hope of getting laid anytime soon. When do you think you'll ask her? Why don't you give Rebecca a call and Give me a call back later, said Chris. Otherwise, there's a party on Saturday night that I know she'll be at. Want to take a ride down there with me? Sure, Ron said, a little bewildered. He was relaxed on the ride home. He pictured news of the moratorium going out to each of the houses as he drove past. He pictured families and heated discussions about the necessities of other wars. He pictured the responses of the people from his generation talking about the horror of present and future wars. He pictured himself saying, "What do these people want that was so different from what we wanted when we became a country?" There was never any answer to that. Older people just shook their heads and said things weren't like that now.